striking new memorial details a painful legacy in American history. The National Memorial for Peace and Justice opens its doors April 26th in Montgomery, Alabama. It documents lynchings of thousands of African-American men, women, and children in the years after the Civil War and well into the 20th century. The museum's stories are based on findings from the Alabama-based Equal Justice Initiative, which says nearly 4,000 African-Americans were lynched in the American South between the end of the Civil War and World War II. Catherine Fletcher remembers seeing a classmate being lynched about 80 years ago in Missouri. Fletcher, who died a few years ago, talked about it on PBS.
They chained him to the back of a car and dragged him up and down the main street in the black neighborhood, screaming, you know, this will happen to. Then they hanged him to a tree and set a fire under him and burned his body.
And to learn more about this troubling part of American history, we spoke with now retired University of Georgia professor E.M. Beck, who studies lynchings in the South. We also talked about it with Doria Johnson, whose great-great-grandfather was lynched in South Carolina nearly a century ago, and she researched that part of her family history. My colleague Celeste Headley spoke with them.
There's been a lot of debate recently about the definition of terrorism, and we're hearing a lot of, you know, some of these researchers, like from the Equal Justice Initiative, talk about lynchings as a form of terrorism. I wonder what you think of that characterization.
The effect of lynchings on a community certainly would be terrorism. If you can imagine a situation of where a group of people come in, take a loved one, kill them, and there is no reaction to law, and there's no particular reaction from the newspapers. And in fact, there may be a grudgeous sentiment that the mob did a very good thing. Now, what message does that send to a community? And it's one that you're vulnerable and that we can do to you whatever basically we want to do. And that is essentially a terrorist message.
And I wonder, Doria, your great-grandfather was killed this way. I wonder what kind of effect it had on your family.
It had a devastating effect on my family and community, so that most people wanted to leave. I was told those who had the means to do so did leave, and our family was actually ordered out of town.
And your family did move?
Yeah, most of us did move. Half moved to Philadelphia, the other half of the kids moved to D.C., and my family moved specifically to Evanston, Illinois. We already had relatives.
Were you aware of the nature of your great-grandfather's death your whole life, or was it something you discovered later?
Very early I was told the story about his lynching, probably in kindergarten, first grade, when my school was integrated. And my grandfather was concerned that I was befriending white, and he told me the story of Grandpa Crawford and suggested that I not trust white people because, you know, they'll kill us, and you know, it just was not a good thing to do.
And did that make you afraid to befriend white kids?
No, I mean, you know, as a first grader, you can't really grasp the meaning of lynching, but I grew into the history and the terror that it left on my family.
Well, I don't want to, you know, bring up some painful past history, but what led to your great-grandfather's death? Was he accused of committing a crime?
He was accused of committing a social infraction, which was cursing a white man over the price of some cottonseed.
Let me go back to you then, Professor. It seems to me like in many cases it would be impossible to know how many lynchings occurred. I mean, in some cases, we know that in some cases people took photos and they took souvenirs, but I imagine in many cases they also didn't talk about it.
Let me make two comments. First, back to Anthony Crawford. He was accused of cursing a white man, but perhaps a bigger infraction is that he was very successful. Mm. He was a very successful farmer in Abbeville in South Carolina. And to the degree which there may have been sort of jealousy and sort of motivated some of the hostile reaction to him is probably a reasonable guess. Now, in terms of your other question, is that there were lynchings in every part of the United States. The exact number will be very difficult to ever determine. Certainly, if we look at the American South, and excluding Texas in this case, we're looking at over 3,000 instances between 1877 and 1950, with almost 3,900 people being lynched. And of those two, about 84% were African Americans. Research continues. The typical lynching incident occurred at night, not by a huge mob, but a fairly dedicated group of men that would say be 15 to 20, where a person was taken from custody and then hauled up a tree and left to strangle or shot at that point.
As I understand, more lynchings occurred in Georgia between the late 1800s and 1950 than any other state. Why here?
Well, actually, it's not clear to me that Georgia, it's a race, if in some sense, between Mississippi and Georgia, who had the most victims. So it's one of those things that, you know, the difference between Mississippi and Georgia is very small in the number of people killed. So, you know, now why specifically Mississippi and why specifically Georgia? Well, I think it's a fairly complex issue. There are questions about the relationships between blacks and whites, and lynching is a form of social control. And there's a question about how in the American South with after Reconstruction, how were African American laborers to be controlled? And so there was a variety of techniques, and sort of lynch mob violence was one that can be very intimidating. And of course, the negative aspect of that, besides the personal loss, is the thing that Ms. Johnson mentioned, is that it was also an incentive for many African Americans to leave the American South and to go to places like Chicago or Pittsburgh or Toledo.
I'm going to play you this comment from Brian Stevenson with the Equal Gesture Initiative, and he's talking about certain requirements that he used when deciding what's a lynching and what isn't.
It's got to be something that involved three or more people involved in the act of murder. It had to be something done by people who had no or very little fear of reprisal or being held accountable. It had to be in response to some perceived misconduct, not always a crime. And then we had to confirm that the victims were in fact killed.
And he could be describing exactly your great-grandfather's death. What steps were taken, if any, to bring justice to your family for your great-grandfather's murder?
Well, Governor Manning considered himself a progressive and, certainly sent resources down to Abbeville to investigate the lynching. However, you know, I've got the report. It looked like a ream of paper. It names. It talks about who was in the crowd and why. Some were government officials, and certain people were brought to an inquest, and the coroner, who was also in the mob, suggested that they had, and Grandpa Crawford came to his death at the hands of persons unknown.
It's been a very, very long time. Is there still a sense with you and your family that you need closure?
Yeah, absolutely. We have never forgotten. It's a part of our family history that's passed down, but so is the pain. You know, you look at the Great Migration and you wonder, how did you end up away from family? And, you know, these stories are often central to why people left the South. They were forced out.
So let me go back to you, E.M. Beck. There has been some efforts recently to try and discover the perpetrators of some of these lynchings, especially some of the more extreme ones, such as the one at Moore's Ford Bridge in 1946 in Georgia. What are the chances there can actually be charges brought in these cases?
Pretty slim. I've been involved with Moore's Ford for over a decade. And there's been ongoing investigation by the GBI and by the FBI.
That's a Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
Yes,
yeah.
Correct. One of the GBI agents told me, he said that when they went to the archive to pull out the materials from the original 1946 investigation, it was one small box. And he said there's very little to go on. There's very little forensics. People know who was involved, but the whole community basically got silenced. And so the idea of getting a successful prosecution is probably extremely rare.
I wanted to read you a comment from a man who's connected to that investigation, Doria, to the investigation into Moore's Ford Bridge, in which four people were tied up and shot 60 times by a white mob. He said in that relation, "Why in the world are y'all bringing stuff up that happened 60 years ago? Why didn't y'all do something about it then?" What would be your answer to that? Why worry about this decades later?
You know, those sorts of quotes are the reason I get up and go to the archives every morning. And it's because we can't forget. So there's a stain on American history. And in fact, it's just part of, you know, sort of our normal social structure to have attitudes like that. You know, where family members are taken and murdered. And so the history and trajectory of families are changed. And then to hear something like that is highly offensive, and it suggests that we need to come and to reconcile and make this part of sort of the normal narrative of America.
I wonder, Professor Beck, if you think that America has just not honestly dealt with that era in its history.
Well, the simple answer is yes, of course. The more complex answer is that as things go back within the African-American community, there is a long oral tradition, a memory, a collective memory of African-American experience in this country. I think amongst many in the white community, their sense of history ends, you know, one generation past. It's easy to walk away from. With the Moores Ford case, the county in which that occurred has changed dramatically demographically since 1946. Most of the people that live there now moved into that area, many from the North and the Midwest, and so they have no connection to it. So it's a very different experience. I like to think of it in some ways is that it takes on a greater, much greater reality in the African-American community than it does in the white community.
That's retired University of Georgia professor E.M. Beck. He studied lynchings in the South. We also heard from Doria Johnson, whose great-great-grandfather was lynched in South Carolina. They spoke with my colleague Celeste Headley. Later this month, the National Memorial for Peace and Justice opens its doors in Montgomery, Alabama. It documents the lynchings of thousands of African Americans in the years after the Civil War.